Here is JPEG Raw, show number 223. Last one here in October, right, Tim?
Yes.
Yep, last one in October, because tomorrow's Halloween.
That's why I got my Halloween shirt on.
Yeah, yep. All my kids are grown and somewhat off to college. One comes home all the time now. So Halloween doesn't have the same appeal that it did when we had younger kids, but it is a fun time. When I was driving home tonight, I saw people outside decorating, ones that hadn't quite done it yet, getting ready for Halloween tomorrow. So we will have the light on and hand out candy tomorrow, but we don't have any of our kids going out trick-or-treating.
Do you get a lot of kids in your neighborhood?
It's sporadic. So the last few years, we've not had a lot of kids, so we end up shutting down early. But sometimes there's a group that comes through, and you know, we'll get those and then whatever. I need to get enough kids to hand out all the candy, because if not, I'm going to eat it. You know?
I do not want to eat it. This is the – I've always said it to my wife. This is the critical time for me. From Halloween through mid-January, I can easily gain 15 pounds. And I just got to stay away from the candy, give it away. I don't want to see it near me, because if I see it, I'm going to eat it. I cannot not eat it if I see it.
Yeah. So Tim and I generally in the pre-show talk some about our Fitbit, but if you don't get the pre-show, which most people don't, probably the only people who get it are those who come to the live show or know how to find it afterwards. So what I'll do is maybe toward the end of the show, just a little brief Fitbit update and invitation. At the end of the toward the end of the show, but not in the post show. We'll do it in the recorded show. If you do want to get that pre and post show, if you ever want to do that, if you subscribe to this show somewhere else other than YouTube, or even on YouTube, you wonder where that is. The pre and post show, as soon as we start streaming, it's recorded on YouTube. At the end of the show, I will move it into a pre list called live show or something like that, and rename the front up to say Raw Live Feed, so you can look for that if you want to get that pre and post ever. Otherwise, you'll just see the regular show with that stuff cut out.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, so we'll talk about that toward the end of the show. There, before that, let's talk about some some photography news here, Tim. And you know, one of the things I actually did a review of this, both on the show and a separate review, is that whole universal lens cap. You remember that thing?
I remember it.
And what was some of my – do you remember any of my complaints about it?
It stretched out. It didn't fit well to some of your lenses. You had to use two hands was probably the big one versus just holding your camera and clicking it on.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know how you fix that. And I'll make sure that I don't have any sound here. They do have a little unique video with this dude who kind of pops in and out and says funny things. So you need to go to – their website, which this is on Kickstarter, and then search for Kuvrd, which is KUVRD. And why am I bringing it up again? Because I did buy one. They didn't give it to me. I bought one, and I got what I expected. You know,
right?
The cap.
I think that's exactly.
Yeah. So nothing against them. I bought what I expected. I mean, I got what I expected. Putting my lens cap on is so much easier. This did fit fairly good on my and look pretty good on my 85 millimeter, but not enough that I'm going to replace my regular lens cap because it's so easy to put on and off. And it probably does provide a little bit of extra protection. One of the things is you'll see here in that video that's showing right now is they've added a curve to the top of it. Mm-hmm. So the one I have, if you can see that, is flat at the top, and it can touch your lens. And in that case, it can add some smearing to the top of the lens.
Right. And I guess if there's any dirt in there, it could ultimately scratch the front of your lens too then.
Yeah. Are they hearing the video? Hold on a second. They may be hearing that video. There we go. Now you shouldn't be able to hear that video.
Well, I definitely don't hear it because I muted on that.
That was weird. I don't know. That's going to be interesting to cut out later on. Because that should not be feeding any audio over. But anyway, they've made some minor tweaks where they've made the little thing in the top a little bigger, the little X or whatever. And That allows you to write on it or something. But the big improvements outside of the top where they do that, where they added a little curvature to the top, the big improvements is added two new sizes. So a smaller one. If you remember when I was putting on my 50, it's a little bit too big.
Right.
So they've added a little bit smaller one for you know, better, for fitting there better. And they've added a bigger one that
for now, 7200.
For 7200. And I think that they, maybe they show it later on, that it fits on a 7200 with the lens cap. It also is supposed to be a little bit more flexible and everything. So
you mean with the lens hood, not the lens cap. Lens hood.
I'm sorry, with the lens hood. Yeah. So because I gave it a bad review the first time around, I'm going to go ahead and buy.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to buy both of those sizes and do another review.
Okay.
As long as they're not that expensive. As long as they're, you know.
Now, do you have to buy it for the Kickstarter or?
Well, I didn't the first time. I bought it actually through their website. So I don't know if they have these available on their website or not, but I will go out there and check and see. If it's just through the Kickstarter, I'll probably just have to wait. Till they come, you know, they come out, and they're showing you a photo of it with the lens hood on a 70-200.
Well, I definitely like the dome, and you know, I didn't even think about it beforehand, and it makes sense that to keep it away from the front of the lens, either for smudging it or if there's any dirt at all in there, now you got it trapped up against it and it could scratch it.
Yeah. So we'll see. I'm sure I'm going to come back with the same thing. Hey, my current lens cap is fine, because if that was the only thing, was the size didn't fit very well, then I could have put it on my 85 and said, hey, I'm good there. But so it's just not for me. And here he is taking pictures with the lens cap on. Who hasn't done that?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's a follow-up for that, and you'll have another follow-up when I actually get them.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and I hope it's better. But it still showed him using the two hands, which I think is the issue with it. I wonder if, I forget how much lens caps are. They're not cheap. I know if you want a lens cap, I know a lens hood. Forget about it. That's very expensive for a 7200 generally. But I wonder what the difference in cost is between a lens cap for a 7200 and the.
Maybe you can search while we're talking.
I am actually.
I have, knock on wood, so far I have not ever lost a lens cap, so I've not had to replace one.
Well, that's good.
So for me, you know, I guess if I had lost them or broken one somehow, because you could break it, you know, sometimes when I take mine off, I throw it in the bag. I am careful with my bag, so it's unless I something crazy went on, you know. It's not going to get broken. I will tell you this, Tim. So the closest I've come to breaking a lens was I had my 7200 in a camera bag with a UV filter on the front of it and the lens cap on it. And I set my bag down, and I would say when it was about, you know, maybe 8 inches or so off the ground, I kind of let go. And when I did that, I heard a crack. I heard a crack. My first thought was, oh my gosh, I just broke my 7200. And it's a Nikon 7200 2.8, you know, VR lens. Those things are not cheap.
No.
And I took it out. And when I took it out, I could hear glass falling all over the place. And what it was the UV filter. So the lens cap must have hit that thing. And when it hit it, it broke the UV filter. Mm-hmm. And that UV filter went, you know, shattered all over the place. Unfortunately, did not impact the, you know, I was able to just brush it off or blow it off and brush off some little pieces off the lens. It didn't scratch the lens at all. It was very fortunate. I've not put another filter back on that thing ever since, because that, you know, scared me. First, I thought, oh, great. It did what it's supposed to do. It broke instead of the lens. But I think if I wouldn't have had it on there at all, it wouldn't have broke at all. It wouldn't have damaged the lens. And of course, the filter would have broke. Mm-hmm. Because that I could have broken the lens filter, and then the glass shards scratched the lens.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, something like this, you know, would have been better.
Yes.
And not done that. Gary says that's why he never uses UV filters. And I've gone the other way too, is I used to use them on everything. And now I don't use them on anything.
I think I have it on one lens now, and that's because it's been on there, and Yeah, I don't think I would buy one anymore. Yeah. More likely to have the lens hood on there, which is protecting the front element usually. Yeah,
especially for a 7200, I would have the lens hood on.
Oh, yeah. If something gets into there, it's going to break through everything.
Yes, then. Yeah. But, you know, it's almost like they were listening to us whenever we were talking about some of the problems with this thing. I'm sure they've heard it from quite a few people.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, Tim, have you ever rented gear?
No, I have not.
You've never rented gear?
No. I've come very close with it and then said no.
So there are several places you can rent lenses and cameras and all that kind of stuff from.
Right.
And I have rented something once, and it worked out fine. The lens, I can't remember what it was now, but the lens worked out good. I think it was from Lens Rental or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's probably the place you're talking about is the place I almost rented from.
Yeah, and that worked out well. I got it. I used it. I shipped it back. Everything worked out fine. Now there's a service, or there has been a service for a while, where you can do the opposite, mm-hmm. where you can rent out your own gear
mm-hmm.
if you feel like doing that.
Yeah, I'm not so certain I would do that, especially after I read the article.
Yeah, so I don't know. They don't say his last name, but photographer Peter was renting out his gear, and he was a little nervous at first too. Like, this sounds like an easy way for somebody to steal all my gear. He's in New York, up there where you are, Tim, mm-hmm. and it's a service called Kit Split, and there's an article over on Petapixel. Kit Split, where you can rent out your gear, and he was making $100 a pop when somebody would rent out their gear, when he'd rent out his gear. And he started off small, and he talked to Kit Split about what happens if somebody breaks my gear, what happens if somebody steals my gear. And they said it's covered by insurance, you know, all that kind of stuff. So he felt a little bit better about it. Echo. Yeah, what is happening here?
Website sound is playing. But I don't know if that was from before. I don't have a time on when he posted that.
That was earlier. Yep.
Okay.
Somehow these freaking web pages keep playing. All right. Now it should be stopped. Anyway, he rented out his gear. We'll wait for Jan as she comes in and tells me I don't have that. Rented out his gear to a couple of people after getting assurances from Kit Split that there was... covered by insurance. And this first few went well. You know, the person would come in, you meet them in person, you hand off the gear, it went well, the person returned it, he made $100. And after doing this for a while, made $1,200.
For equipment he wasn't using. And if I remember correctly, he looked at what they had out there, and he wound up renting equipment that wasn't really out there. Yep. So people were interested in it.
Yeah, he was doing film equipment at first because there wasn't a whole lot of film equipment to rent. So he had, rent out his film gear and did that. Then what had ended up happening was somebody rented out, his Canon 5DS.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not familiar with that camera, and various gear worth about $4,500. And the guy was going to have it for, I guess, a day. I think it was a day.
No, for the weekend. I think it was.
Oh, was it for a weekend? Because maybe it changed. I think at first it was a day, then it became a weekend, something like that. And he was going to make about $80-$90 on the deal. And we don't need to go through the whole list of stuff here. But in the end, what ended up happening was he lost track of the guy. The guy never came back. He was texting the guy. They tried to set up a time for him to come and return it to him. And then eventually the guy just stopped responding at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he went back to Kit Split and said, hey, this guy's not returning my gear. Can you get a hold of him? Kit Split tried to. And that's when they found out that this guy had multiple warrants for his arrest. He was
kicked out of school photography school for stealing.
Because he actually said he needed it for a project he was doing for school. And he continued to post photos of himself on Instagram in various states using this guy's gear. So the NYPD was looking for him for those warrants and that kind of stuff. And Kit Split, so part of what Kit Split had told him they did was they did background checks and checked these
vetting
people.
Vetting
the people who were, renting. And so you thought you were renting to legitimate people. So this turned out to be a student who was already kicked out of school for various things. I can't remember what all he was doing, but, you know.
Theft of equipment.
Theft. Okay, there you go. Theft of equipment. Yeah, that sounds like good. He had warrants out for his arrest. So Kit Split didn't do a great job of vetting this person. But then make it even matters worse when Peter went to Kit Split to say, all right, you can't get it. I can't get it. Your insurance needs to reimburse me for the $4,500. They said, oh, no. That is for if they broke it or if someone stole it from them. Now, in this case, since he stole it from you, it actually technically isn't even a crime because you handed it to him.
Yeah, they called it voluntary parting.
Voluntary parting. You have voluntarily, like I gave Tim a camera, even though we had an agreement that you would return it, I gave it to you. You have to take it up in a civil court. It's not a criminal matter.
Yeah, that was crazy when I read that one. I was like, wow.
Yeah, that is awful. So, and I think his insurance that he had covering his gear, the personal insurance, didn't cover it either because it was, again, not stolen.
Right, he gave it to somebody.
Yeah.
And the police refused to do anything about it because it wasn't considered stolen for the same exact reason.
Yeah, so.
They said it's a civil matter, not a criminal matter.
Just one.
I was like, this was a great theft by this guy.
Yeah, so this is a great lesson. So when he contacted a lawyer, actually Kit Split came back to him and said, all right, we're not going to give you $4,500, but we'll give you $2,000. And his first thoughts were, there's no way I'm taking $2,000 on $4,500 when I specifically asked you guys about this and you were going to cover me. And he talked to a lawyer, and the lawyer says, a friend of his, I thought he said the word dude, but he said, dude, look at the contract you signed. It says right here in the fine print that you're not covered for this event. So he ended up take what you can get. The lawyer told him, take what you can get. And he took the $2,000, and the other $2,500 is, you know, a lesson learned.
Well, there was an update posted to the article today. Oh. Kit Split has fully compensated him for it as of today, and it indicated they're making improvements to the policies and additional updates soon. So he's been fully compensated for it. Now, is it because he's posted these articles about this that they didn't want the negative press or anything? I'm sure that was part of it. But at least has been made whole on this.
You're a company who needs photographers on both ends of your business. Photographers renting, photographers rent as a rentor and a rentee, right? And there's an article posted on Petapixel, which is a huge photography website. I'm sure this thing got lots of views. So yeah, I'm sure Kit Split would have never given him more than the $2,000 had this article not come out. And because of this article now, I didn't know that, but because of this article now, they're going to go ahead and make him whole.
Yes. So that's good, at least. And maybe they're going to need to do something where they're going to have to hold somebody's credit card if they rent something to cover it in the event of theft. And that I could see them doing.
Yeah, and the poor guy who rented it even took a photo of the rentor holding his driver's license up to up to him. So you have a copy of his driver's license, a copy of him, all that stuff. So you think, I've got it. I'm covered. But, you know, in this case, the law is not going to do anything for you. Police aren't going to help you at all.
Right. No, it was something you did not foresee. And, you want to see the good in people, I guess. And he felt he had done well with it previously I think he had 10 rentals previous to this and everything went well. And maybe, like you said, he let his guard down. And he still runs through Kit Split. And he now said he rejects pretty much 50% of the rentals that comes to him now because he's a little bit more critical of who he's going to let borrow. And I think some of the things he said that you need to do, have a personal insurance that covers renting and voluntary parting. Do not rent to new users without feedback or online history, which is sad because how do they get that without renting?
Yeah.
Do a quick Google search of the rent to make sure they are working professionals with legitimate websites or IMD pages.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad, but you know, that's everywhere. So you can't trust.
No,
can't trust people. All right, so a little bit better, feel good story here. Well, two actually, but first up is this crazy thing. Have you seen this, Jan? Hopefully you don't hear any echo because I think I fixed something else that should stop it. But this guy wanted to, let's see, when I start the video, let's see if it has sound. This guy wanted to make a lens out of ice.
Yes.
So he actually wanted to go find, you know, some ice that was somewhat pure, although I don't know what, you know, that right. means.
You need to find pure ice.
So, you know, you could probably have made that at home, but he went to Iceland and got...
Well, that's ice. I mean, go figure.
Yeah, he went to Iceland. I said, well, we'll make it full screen there so you can see it better. He went to, and that's what you're going to get with the ice lens. It's not going to be great optics. But it is cool that you made a lens out of ice. And the photographer's name is, I think it's Matthew Stern, but it's M-A-T-H-I-E-U,
Matthew Stern. That's how I would say Matthew.
Yeah, Stern. And he went to Iceland, found some ice, he 3D printed a holder for it, and then went... and found some ice on the beach, and he had some kind of ice baller that he kind of, there's this 3D holder for it that he printed. He had an ice baller that there's ice baller that he kind of modified to make the lens, the ice fit into that sphere that he can put in there and then attach it to his camera. The thing was, I think the ice actually, and I think this is him testing, the ice only lasted even in Iceland because I guess it was above 32 degrees or next to his camera, which was above 32 degrees. That actually only lasted a couple minutes. So you had to basically make it, put it in the holder, then attach it to your camera and take your shots with it. So in the meantime, he got a a nice trip to Iceland to do all this stuff. And that doesn't look too pure, but he's going to go to what's called Diamond Beach. If you ever, my gosh, there's so many beautiful photography places on this planet. Iceland is one of those things on my bucket list. I've probably mentioned it before. I've gone to one of them, Alaska, but not as a photographer. I went to Alaska as a husband on a cruise.
As the husband.
Yeah, so it's the 25th wedding anniversary. I'd love to go to Iceland as a photographer because it is just absolutely gorgeous. And this is what they call Diamond Beach, I believe, here. You know, look up some YouTube videos on Iceland. It is just... If you're into landscape photography, it is a gorgeous place. So, there
looks,
you go.
It looks otherworldly with some of the pictures.
It does look otherworldly. And you got icebergs just floating up on the beach all the time because he's there in the summer, actually. It's, all the time. So he, as we watch this, he's going to get some ice, then he's got to ball it and then put it into his holder and then quickly take shots. Yeah, there he is trying to ball it. There's fifth and multiple tries broke. He said, there you go. After 5-6 unsuccessful hours of trying it, he finally gets one that works in his ice baller. I never even heard of an ice baller.
I actually saw one on the cruise the last time. It was a big thing that weighed a lot. Yeah. It was much bigger than this, though. And it just compresses it so that it doesn't melt in your... If you have like a bourbon or a scotch or something.
Okay. And obviously, Diamond Beach is not clean, so you get some junk on it. So here's, he's putting it into his lens holder, and then he's going to do something very cool. You know, it's not a practical lens, of course.
No, not at all.
I always find it cool, these people who can, make pinhole cameras or make things into cameras, or in this case, lenses, that aren't really, lenses or cameras or something. Get that out of the way. So he's going to take a few photos with it. Of course, it's not great quality, like I said, but you're taking photos with a piece of ice.
Yes. They look ghostly, the pictures.
They do.
Well, people have ideas.
Yeah, it's a cool idea, and you get a trip to Iceland.
And either way, like you said, you got it right. You got a trip to Iceland, if nothing else.
Yep. Well, that's about it. You go over to his YouTube channel. Let's see, what is his YouTube channel? Matthew Stern. Actually, he's got 65,000 views on this. We don't need to watch an ad, but there we go. Hopefully there's no echo this time, Jan. Matthew Stern over on YouTube. You can check his video out and get, you know, all the stuff there. He does post some more information about it in the comments. All right. So I think that's a fairly good feel-good story, better than that kit split thing that we talked about earlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, next one, Tim, before we go to a tip, I have a tip for tonight.
Okay.
Before we get to the tip, I want to go over this one. Are you looking at what's the tip? Do you know what the tip is?
No, I do not. But I'm going to look for it now.
Yeah, if you look at the show notes, you'd see. Because I have a few things in there we're not going
to
do.
No, I didn't go down to the bottom, so.
That's not at the bottom. It's near the top. Don't say it out loud if you see it.
The first one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I have the site open.
Okay.
I opened it before.
All right. So before we get to that, did you see this article?
This was a heartwarming article.
This is article also on Petapixel. What do you know? So photographer Matthew Dippel was out there with his friend named Josh. And he came over to the spot with this is in Yosemite National Park. There's this famous overhang where he was going to have his friend run out over there and stand out there, take a photo of his friend. And while it looks like he's very far away from this spot, he's using a very wide-angle lens that gives it that effect. And he's really about a two-minute walk away. So it's fairly quickly he can get over there. So his friend goes over there, and while he's getting set up, he sees this couple walk out there and do this. You know, see the couple walk out there.
The guy kneels down.
Guy kneels down and proposes to this girl. So he takes the photo and then runs over there to find him. But by the time he gets over there and he asks everybody who's around.
Right, like 20 people, like 20 and nobody people, knew anything.
Yeah, no one knew anything, so he lost the person. So he then posted on social media, you know, hey, help me look for this. And it got shared a bunch of times. And just recently, they found the couple, Charlie Bear and his fiance Melissa found them. And I'm not sure he shared the photo with them, but found them. And this was actually, I think, their second proposal. Charlie says that it's the first real one. This was the one that really counted, I guess. So that was a really good feel-good story and a good use of social media to find these people. Because before social media, you'd have never found these people.
Not a chance.
Yeah. You wouldn't have gone through the effort of any way to have found those people.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, I don't know how you would even find them. If you didn't find them that day when he went running over there.
Yeah, it's over. So hopefully this couple want this photo, because if I was this couple, I definitely would want this photo.
I think he had said he was going to print it for free for them.
Yeah. And I would have this, you know, somewhere big. I mean, that's.
Yeah, that would be over the couch or somewhere in my room or something.
Which is a little, I don't know. They didn't say this, but it's a little interesting that they didn't hire or bring a friend with them to take this photo.
Right. Well, you're not thinking of it.
Well, if you can't tell from this, but doesn't he look like he's somewhat dressed up and so does she?
I can't tell from this.
Yeah, I can't tell for sure, but he had to have known he was going to go do this, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. He did, definitely, yes.
I mean, this wasn't like they walked out there in a spur of the moment he did it. He planned this.
Absolutely, yes. He would have known what he was doing, and he could have had somebody come out there and take the picture. You know, I'm going to be proposing, and unless you're not telling anybody, it's a surprise to everybody.
That's true. It could have been that way, too. You know, we don't know the backstory for their backstory. But now you do have a photo one way or the other. You either have an additional photo or you have the only photo. I will say, as I was reading about this, it does look dangerous. This shot looks dangerous, right?
Yes.
It is dangerous. I think 10 people a year die in this spot falling down. And recently... Well,
they don't have any guardrails or anything there. So if you... And people get too close to the edge and do something stupid, I guess. Yeah.
There are guardrails in the area. I don't know if there's guardrails exactly there, but there are guardrails in the area. And there's even been, so recently there was a couple who fell off of here. They had like a little travel blog or whatever, and they fell from here. And, you know, maybe it's not quite as far as what you want. You know, they fell at least 80 feet. There was even a, you know, those wing suits you can get into where you can jump off
a cliff. Base jumping
Base jumping. There's some guy who was very experienced at doing that, jumped off of here and he died. So yeah, I mean, it is a dangerous place. And I don't know if you don't know why the couple died, that fell off.
Thankfully. Yeah. I don't think I could get out there then. No, I'm terrified of heights, and that I could not walk out
there. I'm terrified of heights too. And what's ironic about the couple who did fall, again, not this couple, but the couple that did fall, is that they had posted on some social media before about the dangers of doing high, you know, those people who will be on top of something and take photos of them way up there.
Right.
They talked about that and said it is super dangerous because a wind gust could blow you right over. So that's the thing.
And you don't know, maybe that's what happened to them.
Yeah, right? You don't know that's what happened. You'll never be able to ask them because they fell.
No, you won't ask.
Yeah, so that is sad it happened. But, you know, good for this couple who will get this photo.
Yes. Imagine what they must have said and you don't know if they found it or somebody else saw it of them and said, Melissa, you got to see this picture of you guys getting engaged. What are you talking about?
Yeah,
I mean, that's got to be a great feeling.
Well, the photographer himself, Matthew Dippel, I think I'm saying his name right, was super excited when he found that he found the couple. I mean, absolutely, that was very exciting for him. Yep. All right. So one last article, Tim. So
I've had this for a couple of weeks in the notes.
I have. We just haven't got around to it. So a while back,
gives me the willies.
A while back, didn't we do how to take better cat photos?
Yes.
We did. We did how to take better cat photos. So we're going to change and move either up or down on the food chain. So not that cats should be on the food chain going up. You know, hopefully nothing up is eating cats, at least not here in my part of the world.
Yes, I was going to say.
But there are things cats eat.
And humans eat this too.
Humans eat this too, yeah. And so tonight we're going to give some tips from a website. I don't go to this website very often, but it's Orvis. I should say I don't ever go to this website, but they had a good article. from Orvis.com, which I don't even know what kind of site that is. But that.
Yeah, I was just going to go look.
This is, and when I show it to you, your first thought is going to be, oh, this is a joke. Right, Mike? This is a joke. And I may joke around a little bit about it, but the article definitely is not joking. The article is definitely serious. And if you look at it with a serious nature and you are a photographer who wants to take photos of this subject, then there's some good tips here, right? Mm-hmm. And of this subject, these photos are actually pretty good.
They're very good, I thought.
Yeah. These photos are actually very good. So, and I imagine if you do get this subject, and I'm beating around the bush for a long time on this, aren't I? But if you do get this subject, because Gary and Jan are going, oh boy, what is this going to be? If you do get this subject, we'll probably all take it the same way, mm-hmm. right? Or probably have somebody else take a photo of us. And that is, we hold it up next to ourselves to show the size of, look how big or small, usually, look how big this thing is. And that is a fish.
Roadkill.
Gary says roadkill. No, that is a fish. That is a fish. Look how big my fish is. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're catching the fish to eat the fish, you're not, you know, the fish is going to die. Let's just be blunt. The fish is going to die, and having it out of the water is not a big deal. But a lot of fishermen, especially fly fishermen, which I think is what mainly is happening here, fly fishermen are in a lot of cases, are catch and release. They catch, they release. And try and do, they don't generally have barbs in the hook, and they try and do minimal damage to the fish. Right, Tim?
Yeah.
So along that minimal damage is, you don't want to just be holding it up by the gills, up by your head.
Right, because it's going to die before when it goes back in the water. Right. Or maybe not all of them, but enough of them.
Fish can generally stay out of the water for a little bit. You know, I don't know. I don't have a stopwatch and know exactly how long it is. But fish can stay out a little bit and then you put them back down. But, you know, you start yanking on their gills and stuff, you can do damage to them. And they may not die right away, but they may die later, which is not what you're wanting to do here. So what this article was talking about, and I know this sounds like a stupid article, but hey, if you're a fisherman, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you, if you want to take better fish photos, and that sounds so stupid to say, but it's true. I mean, I know a lot of fishermen, and I fish sometimes too. And you know, you want to get a good quality photo sometimes of that fish. What they're basically saying, and I'll tell you that the tip number one, which we give away to beginners all the time, and you'll see this as a theme in these photos, is getting down to the subject level. Look at these photos as we go through them.
They're practically in the water.
They're practically in the water. And almost in all cases, it's someone else taking the photo of the fish. So the person holding the fish is generally not the one taking the fish. Although
I don't think there were any of them in there.
They had one toward the end where it was a selfie, because maybe you're fishing by yourself or your buddy doesn't want to take a picture of your fish. So, you know, basically what they're going down is talking about keep the fish out of the water minimal amount of time. So you caught the fish, you dehooked it, you are going to set it down in the water, maybe even have it, like in this case, partially into the water, but only out of the water for a minimal amount of time, and then you let it go. And, you know, here's a shot where he's actually letting the fish go. You can even get some decent shots where the fish is slightly underwater, maybe when it's just taken off, or you're holding it underwater like that. So he also shows some scenes here where you've got the fish next to some gear. Like the one we're going to see later is he has it next to the net, which is just actually for a fish photo. It's actually a really good photo. One thing I've noticed as a theme in some of these photos, and this one here, what they're doing is instead of a side shot, you got a front shot, which is a different view of it. Mm-hmm. And to me, what makes some of these shots is you got the fish. You got the water. He's buried out of there. The water is dripping from the fish. You got some of the gear in the background, and the
you know exactly what they're doing.
The fisherman's arm and everything going on there. It actually is a good photo of a I think it's a trout. A good photo of a trout there. Fish model S. Fish models. Yeah. And he's showing some, you know, some of the fish next to some of the other gear, and you may even think this fish is dead, but then he lets it go. And here's the one with the net.
Yeah.
And there was with some more gear.
I'll tell you the colors, the time that they took this, it's gotta be either early morning or late evening. the sun is low. Mm-hmm. These are great colors in these pictures, especially the one with the net.
Yeah. So, a lot of fishermen are, you get out really early.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's early.
And you fish to mid-morning or whatever. And I know some people who fish the entire day. Matter of fact, I got a text from somebody today, right before the show, who wanted me to go with him Saturday at 5 a.m. and we'll get back around 8 p.m.
Oh.
I think he was joking with me because he knows I'm not going to do that. But he would. And so anyway, these are probably all morning ones. If you notice with these, Tim, there's one thing that they also do. They're doing a lot of vignetting around there. Mm-hmm. And often whenever the person is up top, you know, top part of the frame, they will vignette from the top more, a little more too. You know, even more so driving that focus onto the fish. Mm-hmm. And I like that one. There's another one they do a little bit later on, where, you know, they're showing some of the background. If I get to that photo here, you can see there, they've darkened the top part of it to de-emphasize the fisherman, and then to, emphasize the fish. Yeah, Jan says, it must be difficult to get them to sign a release. I guess they just tail flap it. They sign it with their tail. Here you go. Here's the photo I was thinking of. So you got the fisherman in the shot. You got the dog in the background. They're all blurred out because you've shot with a very wide open aperture. The fish is there, and they're probably just about to let it go. But those supporting background, supporting background subjects, the person, the fish, even the fishing line that's coming in there, all that adds to it. You know, when I look at this, because I love dogs, I look at the dog there too.
And then here's your selfie.
And then there's the selfie. So I'm betting you somebody listening to the JPEG to Raw or watching JPEG to Raw is a fisherman and has tons of fish shots of them holding the fish up.
Holding it up like this. Look what I caught.
Now, maybe you're not a fisherman. Or maybe you are, and you go with somebody who is, and you maybe take your camera or even your phone, And that gives you some tips on how to take better fish photos.
Yep. Oh, I like that. That's, if I was a fisherman, this would be absolutely would be something I would have done.
Yep. Now, what I would love, my favorite subject of pets or things like this is not a cat, not a fish, but dogs. So what I would love to get on the show, we had a long time ago, Tim, you remember that? We had the underwater dog photographer, Seth Castile.
Oh my God. That might have been like within the second year.
I think that was. So probably way before Jan or Gary or anybody else who's listening right now. Listen, it was in the early days, you know, not that we don't have problems now, but we had tons of problems back then with it. But Seth was a great guest. If you ever want to go back and watch that, I can't remember what show it was. It was back in probably the 30s or you know, under 100. If you go to our site and just search for it, you can see it. But Seth does a thing where he basically has the owner throw a ball, or maybe he does it, throw a ball into a pool. And he's under the water, and then the dog comes running in and jumps after the ball. And as it's coming in under the water after that ball, he's taking photos of it. And he has mastered that in his photos. I think he even did a book on it. And for a while, he had a TV show. And from those photos, he also got a cameo experience. What do you call it? A cameo on the Duck Dynasty. He was on Duck Dynasty.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was on Duck Dynasty.
It's a cameo.
Yeah. Cameo.
Appearance.
Appearance. There it is. Cameo appearance on Duck Dynasty. If you watch that show, it's canceled now. But Seth Castile, great dog photographer. I would like to find, another dog photographer to come on the show and talk to them, because I love dog photos. Right, Tim?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I think that was all the articles I had for tonight.
They were good ones.
Yeah, they were good.
I don't know which one my favorite one was.
It was definitely the fish one, wasn't it? Yeah, well, I don't always...
I've been waiting for that one. Yeah. And Orvis looks like to be a fishing website of some sort.
I think it is, yeah. Yep. You know, so something I want to do every now and then when we don't have a guest, and it's been a long time since we've had a guest, but we're going to have guests coming up before long. We're going to start to have some guests again. Maybe as we roll out of 2018 and into 2019, you know, we've been going with this format for a while. We do news stories. We're going to start mixing it up some and start having some guests. But it intermixed into that. And tonight, I also want to point out some what I'm going to call featured photographers. Featured in the sense that I just run across photographers every now and then. Some of them have a large following. Some of them don't. You know, like I talked about Thomas Heaton before. New to me. I had not heard of Thomas Heaton before I found his YouTube channel. By the time I found him, hundreds of thousands of other people had already found him, so I was not breaking new ground. But, you know, I wanted to, you know, say that because maybe there's other people who, like me, had never heard of Thomas Heaton. So tonight I'm going to talk about a photographer who's not as big as Thomas Heaton as far as followers as I can find. So maybe you have not followed this person. And that is Rachel Cohen. And I have done a terrible job of tracking how I've met people. Okay, so I have no idea how I met Rachel. So Rachel, if you actually listen to the show, I don't know how we came in contact with each other. Please reach out to me and let me know, because I do a terrible job of doing that. But I follow her on Twitter. She posts she is an awesome landscape photographer, as you can see from some of these images. Go over to RC for Rachel Cohen, RC Natural Photos. pixels.com. I'll put that in the show notes.
That's a big site.
Yeah. I'll put that in the show notes because I don't know if you're going to remember that, but it's RC Nature. Did I say natural? RC Nature Photos.pixels.com. And you can see from some of these photos as we go through them, they're just, yeah, some of these are just fantastic. Stunning. They're just stunning. I follow her over on Twitter. And there's links on her site to, you know, from Twitter. So you can go over there. And I think this might have been the one that she recently posted on Twitter that I commented about. But Rachel Cohen.
Where is she from?
Michigan. She describes herself as a fine art landscape and nature photographer, but she's from Michigan. She's not, as far as I can tell, on Facebook. She had, you know, these links that you see here over on the right are where you want to share it to there. But she is on Twitter, and what her Twitter handle is, I don't know. I'll have to look that up and put it in the show notes too. There you go. Rachel Cohen.
Very nice. Nice shots.
Check her photos out. All right. And Jane, you mentioned Don Kamarashka. Don has his own show, Photo Geek Weekly. I've been on as a guest 3 times. Every time we talk about Don, I need you to come on my show. And he's dying to come on. It's, to tell you the truth, it's been me not reaching out to him to set up a date. Because if you subscribe to the show or you watch live like Jan and Gary are tonight and some other people, you know, Tim and I have been somewhat sporadic as things have gotten in the way of us doing shows. I'm hoping that will settle down. And so because of that, I've been a little bit reluctant to schedule guests, but we'll start doing that soon. And Don's probably going to be one of the first ones we get on the show, Don Kamarashka. I'm also going to try and get Seth White to come back on the show, although his news is kind of dragging out now. It's kind of old. He switched from Canon to Sony, to the mirrorless, and it's not so much of a news story anymore. So we may have to have him on for something else too. But all right. So
yeah, but you could talk. I mean, it's probably about a good, I don't think it's 6 months yet that he has, but it'd be a good time to say, how is it now that you're converted over?
Well, and Seth has done,
especially since it's going to Sony. I mean, that's the best part.
But since we last talked to him, Seth has done a humongous amount of different things. So there'll be a lot to talk to him about. All right. As we head out, I want to, I'll catch you up on the Fitbit, because the reason I'm going to include it in the show tonight, and generally I don't, generally it's in the pre-show or the post-show, but vast majority of people don't ever see the pre and post. So if you are not, if you don't see that, you just subscribe. Both Tim and I, although Tim doesn't have his on right now, so I'm getting more steps.
Mine's, yes, you are. Yeah. Mine's charging.
Dang, it didn't work. Tim and I both are friends on Fitbit. If you have a Fitbit, search for, I think I'm Mike H maybe out there. I forget what photo I have on, but if you want to, you can email me at podcast@jpedro.com if you want to be sure which thing I have. If you have a Fitbit and want to be Fitbit friends, you know, Fitbit me, then you'll see Tim, and we can become Fitbit friends if you're into that. And we don't do challenges very often, but, you know, we'll taunt each other and do that kind of stuff. I got my own things I'm trying to do to get in shape and everything, and that doesn't always mean walking the maximum number of steps. So Fitbit challenges I will only accept on a rare basis, but it's still good to have Fitbit friends to encourage you.
Takes you out of your routine.
So if you're into that, friend us. We'd like to get some more friends. I think we've already got me and you, of course. We got Christina. We've got Michael. We've got Barry. Barry and Jim. Barry and Michael are just killing it all the time.
I think I passed Barry this week, though.
Oh, did you? Well, I don't know what he's doing, because he's been...
He's not syncing his Fitbit.
Maybe that's it, because he is, he's lost a, I forget what it is, but he's lost a lot of weight. And I will tell you, what does this have to do with photography? Some of it doesn't have anything to do with photography. Yeah, we don't have to be 100% here about that. But for me, it actually, as I'm starting to lose weight and get in better shape, I'm willing to walk further with the camera, willing to hike in different places I wouldn't have hiked maybe before with the camera. So it does go, you know, getting in shape goes with life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Speaking of hiking to get photos, Tim, how's your fall colors up there?
I was commenting to my wife, and my son was in the car the other day, and I was like, sporadic trees by here are absolutely beautiful. The other ones are green. It's got to be the type of trees we have here. I never on Long Island get good colors.
Okay.
They're gonna go brown or just fall out of the trees. There are some trees with absolutely beautiful colors, but vast majority of them are still green. And I know I think I'm beyond what they call the peak. Peak point already. Yeah. So that I'm expecting those trees just to turn brown and that's it.
I think down here in Georgia, we're about a week off of our normal cycle. So maybe two weeks. They're saying we're actually going to peak instead of the end of October, it may be toward the end of the first, or maybe even into the second week of November. I guess because of the warmer weather and not getting colder, mm-hmm. I assume. So just steal some time here.
Gary's up here in the New Jersey area, and he's got the same, he says. So
yeah, maybe
we're just behind.
Maybe you're just behind. It's a good thing for me because, you know, the thing I always struggle with, Tim, and I bet you do the same thing with me, is finding the time to get out and shoot. Mm-hmm. You know, during the week, I'm working all from – I leave here, it's dark, and I guess next week when the time changes, I'll be getting home when it's dark. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's night photography you can do, but I don't do a whole lot of that. That was weird. Something just weird happened. For me, that's, yeah, I want to get out and shoot other things. So that basically means that the weekends are the only time I can shoot. And I would say for the vast majority of Saturday morning up until maybe 1 or 2 in the afternoon, I'm down here doing, you know, podcast stuff.
Right.
And then Sundays are generally, you know, work around the house. So I've not made the time. And
I have not taken a lot of pictures this year at all.
I would tell you that every time around this today and as Wednesday comes on and as Thursday comes on, I'm telling myself, this is going to be the weekend. I'm going to make myself do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not happening. So
it's not happening.
It's not happening. I gotta force myself because, you know, up there with you are up where I'm at, it may be delayed by a week or two, but it's coming and it's going
to
go.
It's coming and you're not going to be able to stop it.
Yeah. Yep. All right. So we're going to go ahead and head into post show. Thank you for coming out and try and have this out and published by this weekend, which I'll be doing Saturday. Yes, that's what we talked about. So until next show, keep it raw. Good night, everybody.
Good night.